Well, COCAL is a couple of things, and that was part of the discussion all through the conference, is what it is and what it should be. It is it even has two names. One is the Conference on Contingent Academic Labor, and the other is the Coalition of Contingent Academic Labor. But mostly what it is the name that people have come to apply to the network of people who continue to work across organizational lines all over the country on behalf of non-tenure track, part-time, contingent college faculty. And so people refer generically to COCAL as the contingent faculty movement generally, and it confuses people because it's not really a consolidated organization. It's a network and an idea of coalition activity.
Okay, and you've mentioned the word contingent academic labor, the term contingent academic labor a number of times. And for a general audience, can you explain what you mean by that and help people understand the scope of the issue that you're trying to address and that COCAL is trying to address?
We exist because the majority of college faculty today are not the classical tenured full-time professors, but rather are people who have no job security, who teach on a class-to-class, semester-to-semester, year-to-year basis with no assurance of reemployment. We are casual labor in the academic sense. We are contingent upon enrollment, program needs, and the whims of the department heads and deans who hire us. People who are in our classes see us as just another professor. They don't realize this, but in fact we are living a very different life than the tenured full-time professors who are now a minority of those teaching classes.
And what kind of working conditions do contingent academic instructors face? I mean, so you're a student in the classroom, you see one instructor in front of your classroom, chances are it's a non-tenured instructor or non-tenure track instructor. What are the differences in the conditions that person faces versus the conditions that a full-time tenure track or tenured person faces?
Well, the conditions that students could see the most clearly are that we do not have often enough time to meet with students outside of class. We often are not paid for office hours. We're teaching many times more than one place or working more than one job, so that we are not available full-time on the campus. Our names are often not in the class schedules. Students cannot find us easily, or the next semester we may not be at the institution at all. Those are the instabilities of our conditions, not knowing what we're going to teach next semester or where. Those are the things that students can see. The other things that we live with are generally pay that is less than half per class what full-time permanent tenured faculty would make, sometimes as little as 10 or 15% per class. Most of us do not have any health benefits or other benefits paid by the employer. Because we don't have any job security, one complaint can get us fired, so we effectively have no freedom of speech on the job or academic freedom. And those are the realities of the conditions in which we work. Many have no offices. Our office is our car, and our desk is our backpack.
So that's, I think, a hard thing for people to understand. I mean, they think that a college instructor is someone who's got an advanced degree, and you're teaching in a college campus, so it's a professional job. But you're really saying that that many college instructors are essentially the Walmart employees, or at the same, or maybe even a lower status than many Walmart employees.
We have colleagues who are making more money waiting tables than they are teaching, and that's their second job. We have colleagues with advanced degrees. Virtually all of us have master's degrees or PhDs, who at various times are forced to live in their art studios or even live in their cars. Many people are teaching the equivalent of a full-time load or more, and making less than $20,000 a year.
So you began by telling us about COCAL, the sort of loose coalition of activists who are trying to address these conditions through conferences and an organization. And from what we've seen this week, it's a diverse group of people from all across the country. One might expect the professional organizations that represent college faculty to have taken this on themselves and to have said, listen, we are the full-timers who we usually represent are now less than half of our the instructors on campus. We better get out there and do something about this. What role or what are the professional organizations like the American Association of University Professors, the National Education Association, the American Federation of Teachers, were they right up front in addressing this problem, or what's been the interaction between COCAL and the big national organizations?
Well, first I have to say that COCAL is an expression of this movement among contingent faculty, but the movement really began back in the 1970s when the numbers of contingent faculty started increasing really substantially. But as a national network movement, it really has been the last 10 years with the COCAL conferences. The answer to your question about the main professional associations and unions is that they basically had to be dragged, kicking and screaming, into acknowledgement that the majority of us doing the work were basically casual labor, because they, of course, didn't like that development. We don't like that development, but they didn't have a strategy to deal with it, and their existing full-time tenured and tenure-track leadership was definitely of two minds as to how to relate to it. On the one hand, they wanted to minimize the use of contingent labor because it threatens the conditions of people who were making a living wage with job security. And on the other hand, there were people who argued that if they're doing the work, they need to be organized and brought up to better standards. That debate still continues, but on paper now, they all do support organizing us.
Okay, so the big unions had to, the big organizations had to be brought in kicking and screaming, and now you say that they do at least have some policy statements and there's some action taking place by those organizations, and we saw them here this year, all of them in some form or another, representatives of them. But let's talk about that. From 1999, I heard someone say that when the first COCAL conference took place, basically it was a group of contingent workers, or part-time instructors, getting together and sharing their experiences, saying, wow, we are really getting screwed. Can you talk about some of the gains that have been made just since the COCAL conferences began and what's happened just by getting this group of people together?
Well, a couple of things. One, there's been a lot more organizing. A lot more people now have unions, which always improves their conditions and has raised people's pay and conditions. We have a lot more power within the unions than we did before. We have a public presence that didn't exist before. There's been a lot of articles and in the press and much more notice. It is recognized that the casualization of the workforce in higher education is one of the major issues confronting higher education today. Lots of legislators know the issue now. There's been some legislation that has actually begun to reform the situation somewhat, both in terms of limiting the use of contingent labor and in terms of improving our conditions and pay and benefits. But the other thing I think that's equally important for the future is that there now has developed a movement that's coordinated nationally in the U.S. and now linked to a coordinated movement in Canada and Mexico, speaking to these same issues and talking to each other, despite the fact that we speak different languages, despite the fact that we're in different unions, we're talking 5 or 6 or 7 different unions, and despite the fact that almost all of us are in organizations that are not mainly made up of contingent faculty. And so this is a grassroots movement from the base that has forced changes up above, both in our institutions and in our and in the organizations, and we see the need for this, but we also see the possibility of this in the fact that almost never, when contingent faculty get a chance to vote for a union, do they vote no. There's been one case in all of the United States history when part-time contingent faculty voted against organization out of the now literally dozens, if not hundreds, of elections that have been held. people are scared, but people are clear that they need a union.
Okay. The this was an exciting conference for you, and I think it was a very busy conference for you. You were the chairperson of it, and a lot of activity, very well presented. You had excellent translation, excellent sound. A lot of the details worked out very nicely. But aside from the technical parts and just the coordination of it all, which you and Jocelyn did, what were some of the major gains and major accomplishments that you really think happened this year at this COCAL?
I think two things. For the first time, we were able to create and sustain a real discussion about strategy, about what people have done that worked, what we should do, what people could do in the future, and what we might be able to do together. We were able to create a strategy discussion, more than just exchanging experiences and more than just horror stories of conditions. It's not finished, but we were able to begin that and start speaking the same language strategically. The second thing that was crucial was the serious participation of 8 or 9 people from different places all over Mexico who we discovered, despite speaking Spanish, are really speaking the same language. And now we really do have a tri-national movement because the conditions are much more the same than they are different in all of the in all of the three countries. And that is on its way to transforming the movement. One of the things that was talked about in the final meeting was how we need to further internationalize the movement and make sure that next time at the next COCAL we have people from Japan and the rest of Asia and Europe where these conditions are very much the same.
And how important are unions to this whole process of improving the status and improving working conditions for contingent academic workers?
Well, I think unions are crucial, but they're not sufficient. We need unions, like all workers need unions. We need unions of a particular type because we don't work in one place and we don't have stable employment. So unions are important and essential. But we also need organizations that speak that speak exactly to us as contingent faculty and as a floating labor force. And we are exploring different kinds of organizational structures that might answer those needs. And there are experiments going on all over the country, including here in Chicago. People are also doing work on contingent faculty issues within the professional associations, the organizations of philosophers and historians and English teachers and teachers of English as a second language, etc., to raise their consciousness about this and to get them on record and their resources behind the idea of protecting their profession, their discipline, their academic discipline, and that's another arena for organizing and struggle in the future.
Okay, Joe, and the last question is really just a catch-all for you. If you've got a podium in front of a group of workers and you want to make just one final pitch to them or statement to them, what is it that you would want to let the audience know?
Two things. That equal pay for equal work is a principle that all workers should have. Basic worker rights should be spread to everybody, that academic freedom isn't academic, and everybody should have also free speech rights on the job. That's one sort of general point around the whole issue of worker rights and fairness and protections for us as well as all other workers should have. And the second thing is that because we don't work on widgets, we work on human beings, our working conditions are students' learning conditions. And therefore, what happens to us is multiplied many times through the conditions of learning of students. If our classes are doubled in size, that not only speeds us up by times two, but it also degrades education for those students times two because they get half as much attention.
Joe, thank you very much. You put on a great conference. Congratulations to you.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for coming and being helpful at the conference.